comentando la nueva agenda urbana. Vivencias y prácticas que se reflejan en mejores ciudades.
In commenting the new urban agenda, we are with Gillian Murray and Gautam Babar. They come from the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. Crime is indeed one of the aspects that affects life in cities, and obviously that is one of the reasons why it is so present in the programs of the United Nations, and also why you're having some presentations here in Habitat 3. Could you please tell us about the importance of addressing issues of crime in an event like this and in general?
I mean, clearly the idea that communities should be safe, that people should have access to common services, including health services, education services, lies at the heart of the urban agenda. After all, what we are trying to achieve with the new urban agenda is to create cities which are friendly for everybody, which allow access to common goods for everybody, and which are able to sustain themselves going forward, both socially, economically, and materially. In order to make sure that conditions exist where people are able to access services and able to participate, they need to feel safer. And that is where the importance of crime prevention comes in. There are also issues related to justice and the rule of law, generally speaking, which are important to consider when you're talking about building newer kinds of cities. And of course, there is the perpetual problem of corruption, which all of us have faced day in and day out. Whenever we want to access some services or we want to get what is truly the rights of the citizens, very often we are expected to bribe or provide monies that are not really part of the legitimate flow. So because of all of these issues, it is important really to take a holistic approach to crime prevention when you're looking at the urban setting, focusing specifically on groups in vulnerable situations. You're talking about young children, young women, young boys, women, generally speaking. Also, you're talking about elderly people who are often now victims of crimes. You're talking about people who are differently abled, who may not be able to access services and are therefore seen as being more vulnerable and open to violence. So we need to look at ways in which we can make the vulnerable sections of cities safer, make them feel safer. And we also need to see how we can create systems and processes that will allow safety considerations to be factored in every time you're making new plans on development or about access to services and so on.
I suppose the crime is perceived in different ways in different societies, probably societies around the world. What is considered a very big criminal issue, like you were mentioning, for example, corruption, is something that in other societies, probably mainly in Latin America, corruption in many cases is lived like day by day, and people don't even know that they are getting involved in a corrupt behavior. And I will suppose that has a lot to do with education of values and ethics beyond just the criminal legal factor. How can we work our way into making societies, common people, to understand that the fight against corruption begins with learning about ethical behaviors?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because of course one of the conventions that our office looks after and is custodian to is the United Nations Convention Against Corruption. This in fact has been one of the most important international tools that has been signed in the course of the past 10 years or so. And you're right that legalizing or putting in place the legal framework to criminalize corruption is definitely an important first step to be taken. But then you need to go beyond that. Once the law is created, how do you start implementing the law? How do you implement the law by building people's faith in the ability of the law to protect them? And there, of course, education is an important part of it. We are now actually going into the second phase of the reviewing the implementation of the Convention Against Corruption, and that is going to focus on prevention. So a lot of work will go into what you mean by preventing corruption. And in fact, UNODC, in the course of the next year, we are going to launch a large global program that is going to work on an educational syllabus highlighting issues related to the rule of law and corruption, which will roll out to universities and schools across the world. And of course, Latin America is going to be part of that. But very interesting that you brought up this issue, because one of the significant examples where we have seen work happening on corruption at the community level, anti-corruption at the community level, has in fact been in Latin America. Our office in Bolivia was running an initiative about transparent budgetary processes and involving common people to understand how much money was allocated for particular things, how that money was spent, what was achieved, what was not spent. And that in itself creates a culture of transparency where public officials are held accountable. And once everybody, once the public knows what is going in, what is coming out, what you're getting for the money that you pay in taxes, the chances for actually asking for corrupt behavior or siphoning off public money for purposes that are not legitimate becomes less. That being said, there are many, many approaches to countering corruption working through the community level, and we've seen a lot of grassroots action happen around that particular issue. But of course, it is something that we need to learn as we go along, and we need to learn from the examples of what is happening in communities themselves.
Another aspect maybe about the perception of crime in many places in Latin America is the fact that in many situations, homelessness and people that live on the streets are considered criminals. And there is like a perception of insecurity or crime just because there are some certain types of population in certain areas of cities. Do you somehow deal with any issues about teaching or dealing with communities to understand really what is a criminal presence and a criminal behavior so that other people won't be stigmatized just because there are like people that are maybe in drugs or living on the streets and perceived as criminals? I mean, this perception of human population as criminals when they're really just people under conditions that socially put them on the streets.
I mean, again, I think you've raised a very interesting issue, because, of course, perceptions about criminality and perceptions about what constitutes a threat to your safety are things that are very culturally conditioned. These cannot be changed purely by way of law. These have to be done gradually through incremental means, working through community groups, youth groups, and schools. You mentioned the example of drug users. Now, of course, drugs is one part of the mandate of our office. And the way we've been approaching the whole issue is that when you're talking about drug users, they need to be seen and treated as people who need assistance, help and health assistance and social assistance, rather than any kind of penalization. So it's a behavior that destroys one's health, and that is what individuals need help with. As you start working along those lines, and as you start educating various parts of society, including the communities, government, schools, the police, the perception of threat that often accompanies seeing drug users can be lessened. In terms of homelessness, again, this is an interesting issue. And personally, I think that instead of seeing homeless people as criminals, they need to be seen as victims of circumstances which have not given them access to equitable housing. In many cases, when they find themselves in these circumstances, they may need to resort to crime. But when they resort to crime, it is crime to sustain themselves, not necessarily to enrich themselves at the cost of others. Once we start understanding this and looking at it in this perspective, it is very likely that communities will be able to move away from this sort of behavior. And of course, another key issue is that you start working with these populations, and city governments have a major role in this. If you have a large population of homeless people, there are many different ways of engaging them in constructive social tasks. So you may not be able to employ them in an office, but you can certainly use their presence on the streets, their knowledge, and the way they see crimes actually happening as a resource to fight crime. And once that happens and you publicize it regularly, they will be seen as resources in the fight against crime rather than people who create crime.
When you talk about that, you're already including the community and the sense of communities incorporating other people to the way of combating or fighting against crime. What are the main programs that, as a part of United Nations, you run to reinforce people and empower people to create ways of fighting crimes from the society without recurring themselves to violent or vigilante techniques, but ways in which the community can really contribute to fighting crime without creating at the same time, as it has happened in many places, like these groups that also become violent groups, but this way of them getting correctly involved in fighting against crime?
You know, again, this is, it's a difficult question to answer, you know, because you can't have a one-size-fits-all approach to these sorts of issues. The way you work with communities will depend on where the community is, what part of the world it is located in geographically. You have to also consider the level of resources that are available to the community, that are richer communities, and then communities that are deprived. You also need to look at communities in terms of what sustains these communities, what is the major source of livelihood. But I can just give you a few examples of the way we've been working with communities. And just yesterday, in fact, the Canadian delegate who was at our special session gave us a good example. You know, sometimes you have these very easy solutions saying, oh, you've got all these boys running around, they're doing nothing, let's give them a playground. And you get them involved in sports and then everything will be fine. But what we've also seen is that in cases like this, the women, the young women who are not part of that target group, actually start feeling more threatened. And they still don't walk around those areas that are given to these young boys as, you know, as their spaces. So the example that the Canadian delegate gave us yesterday was that instead of looking at sport, they started consulting with the women in the community to find out what would help in reducing the threat or the perception of threat for women in the community. And they came up with the idea saying, okay, don't give them places for sport. Instead, give us places to make kitchen gardens. So the young men can come and help do the kitchen gardening. The older women can tell them what vegetables to grow in what seasons, how they can be sold, how they can be used. And the girls can then be utilized in order to help sell the produce. So it truly becomes a community endeavor, which enriches the community, increases the perception of safety for all parts of the community, the elderly, women, as well as young men. And then you find solutions that are tailored to particular localities, particular communities.
Gillian, there are two topics that I'm sure you can really give us information about, which is number one, the concept of cybercrime and everything that is going on through cybercrime nowadays from your agency, and also the way of implementing this new urban agenda in crime-related issues.
Okay, I'll take your second question first. On supporting the implementation of the new urban agenda, this requires commitment and close collaboration between relevant entities of the UN system, national and local governments, the private sector and communities. And we have, from our point of view in UNODC, we've actually got 3 points that we consider a priority. One is building a global partnership of all the relevant UN entities and other stakeholders to effectively target causal factors of crime and violence at city level, including addressing corruption, which we've just spoken about. Second, developing a UN system-wide guidelines on safer cities as part of the new agenda. And the third point is the development of a framework to monitor crime prevention and security at city level. It's quite clear that we need more and better data to be able to take action and address the problems. Now, on the question of cybercrime, UNODC has a global program on cybercrime, and that is to assist member states and build their capacities, basically. So there's a lot of there's different elements of it. There's quite a large program in El Salvador. We've been working in East Africa. We've been working in Asia. And much of this is training and investigative techniques. It's training law enforcement. There's another angle where we're working on online child sexual abuse and exploitation to target this. And in fact, the program in El Salvador is dealing with this specific aspect. It's the program now it's expanding, but it needs to grow much larger. So we're sort of working in specific countries for the moment. I think the idea, as time grows, and subject to available funding, of course, because the program is funded by member states, the idea would be to put people, there's a coordination role in headquarters in Vienna, and the idea would be to put experts into different regions in the globe. And I know that we have people working in El Salvador. We also have people in Bangkok in East Asia at the moment. Hopefully that program will grow. For me, it should be one of our flagship programs. It's a very interesting area. Thank you.
Okay, indeed, crime is one of the main issues that relate to everybody living in cities nowadays, and that is the reason why we were here today talking with Gillian Murray and Gautam Babar from the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. Thank you very much.